Hello and welcome to another edition of the End Zone Podcast. My name is Eric Jensen, and it is the one-year birthday of this podcast. We have been on the air for a year now. We put out our first show about a year ago. Things have changed. People have left, but we're still going strong. 121 episodes in, I think. I don't really keep track. I know 120 was like an episode or two back, so it's whatever. So I just wanted to say thanks to everyone for listening, and today we have an awesome interview. Our final of our four dream guests, Dan Hanzus, joins the show. We're going to talk a little bit about the New York Jets, a little bit about the Around the NFL podcast, and just some life stuff in general. It's going to be a great time. Hope you guys enjoy the interview, and we will be back on Saturday with our first divisional preview. All right, guys, thanks so much for listening to our show for a year. Enjoy the interview. So we now welcome onto the show Dan Hanzus, the host of the Around the NFL podcast. And Dan, I have to tell you, you complete the circle of our dream guest. We have now had all four members of the Around the NFL podcast on this show. Are you honored?
I am highly honored. It's definitely the End Zone podcast is a bucket list achievement, and there are two ways to read into it, that I was just like the last one you had to pick up and four out of four, but I'm definitely going to play it the other way, which is saving the best for last angle. So yes, let's go out with a bang here.
No, here's the deal. You see, you are the hardest to, like, I feel like, get in touch with. Like you're very vocal about having the inner circle. And like you can't go in right away and just say, hey, I'm just this random person that has never, like, may have mentioned you on Twitter once or time, but we've never talked. Let's just talk for like half an hour. You might be like, I don't know about that. Might be a bad idea.
It. You definitely nailed it. It's definitely a stranger danger. Everybody that knows me knows that I have to keep a tighter circle, whether it's social engagements or even podcast appearances. So just the fact that that we're talking right now shows that how highly I think of you, Eric, and the entire group.
Oh, I'm honored myself. I am so, honestly, like, as I fanboy for half a second, flattered that you would ever consider coming on a Rinky Dink podcast like mine.
Oh, come on. I'm happy to be. When Mark and I started the ATL Debate Club 6 years ago, every podcast starts, with a dream, and you guys, you do a really nice job, and you hustle and you promote, and that's the reason why you've been able to book all of us, because we respect your game, man. So we're all talking football. We're doing the podcast thing. Let's fly. I like this.
Yeah, for sure. Let's start with a minute of shop talk. So from one host to another, what makes a good podcast host? Because I'll be honest, I kind of started doing some kind of blogging or like sports writing has been kind of a dream of mine since like the eighth grade, and I started a blog in like the eighth grade, but just about a year ago, legitimately a year ago today, I just kind of decided, oh hey, like a podcast might be kind of a fun thing to do. And part of the reason that I did that was, like, I believe it was, I can actually remember the exact game. It was right after the Broncos beat the Patriots that I don't even remember how, but I stumbled onto the Around the NFL podcast, and I just got hooked. So you kind of inspire, your show kind of inspired a little bit of this show, and I take a lot of my hosting cues from you. So I would like to just ask, what do you think makes a good podcast host?
To make a good podcast host, you said?
Yeah.
I would say that it's very similar to the skills necessary to thrive in karaoke, which is you have to know when to take the lead, and you also have to know when it is time to distribute, and you also have to make sure to keep everybody involved. So, you know, it all depends who you do a show with. Wes, myself, Greg, and Mark have done over 700 shows together now, so it's far easier to get into a rhythm of the show when you have that many reps. But I think in general, that would be the number one thing is if you host a show, especially with multiple people, it's you have a duty to keep everyone involved and distribute. You're more a point guard than, you know, some Josh Smith shooting guard, or insert Utah Jazz star for your Salt Lake City roots. that would be my number one tip for anybody that hosts a podcast is it's not just about you, it's about moving the ball.
Yeah, for sure. I like that analogy. I've kind of thought about myself at times, and especially when you have like two people who have never really been with you before, which this show has a lot of because we're just grabbing like random bloggers from the Twitter sphere and throwing them into this. And it's a lot of, okay, Dan, what do you think about that? And I think that what I struggle with the most is I'm trying to figure out a way to like be able to say, okay, Dan, what do you think about that? Like 10 different ways so it doesn't get repetitive.
Yeah, I think, and that is a challenge. And we actually, you know, for that reason, we don't often, as anybody that is a fan of the podcast knows, we don't have a ton of guests on the show. I mean, we'll always have somebody in the mix occasionally, well, people in the mix occasionally. But what we really do is we take what we have, which is our number one asset, which is the chemistry that we've gained. And the in-house knowledge of the scientists and Mark's ability to be smart and funny and a little bit of weird and manic, like all those things, and taking all the positive things and just using that as the show's stew. When you bring in outside elements and outside people, it's harder to make that sing because of the lack of familiarity with the situation. So there is it's a different game to do what maybe you do more of, and it is more difficult, and it's one of the reasons we don't do it as much. But it's the same. It goes the same in the role of the host. Your job is to just drive the conversation and keep things moving and keep people involved. And sometimes, yes, that involves finding seven different ways to say, what do you think?
Yeah, for sure. So my last kind of podcasting related question is this. Do you guys have like an outline or like a rundown that you use for every show? Because I know for me, like for me especially, and especially bringing on all types of new people, and I hear a lot of podcasts that when you ask the question, they're like, no, we'd never do that. That's not organic or whatever. And I get that, but I just feel like I want to know. Do you use like an outline kind of rundown of this is what we're going to talk about, this, 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 and this? Maybe not super specific, but do you at least kind of have an outline?
Yes, every show we do has an outline. And if you're a fan of the show, you know we follow a similar structure, which is we do an open, we do the news, and then typically we'll do one segment that we'll cook up in advance, a general idea for the segment. But where we will differentiate from, say, an NFL Network show, when they have their pre-production meetings before a show begins, not only will they map out every minute of the show, they'll even hit on points like, okay, Willie's going to say this, and then Lindsay's going to set this up, and then James Jones will say this. And they'll know exactly what's coming. And that's done for a good reason. It's good done so the people, B-roll, you know, having the right video syncing up with the conversation to have the show produced as flawlessly as possible. But for us, the good thing about radio/podcasting is you don't need to be as prepped. So what we do is we'll come up with a segment idea, and I'll use today's show as an example where we basically wanted to illuminate different teams that we haven't been talking about as much recently. So we each picked two teams, and the group shared on our instant messaging system beforehand which teams we would be talking about. So we each took two teams, so we're not stepping on each other by doing the same team. But it kind of ends there because we don't want to give away any type of elements of what we're going to be talking about specifically, because we want the reactions off each other to be real and organic rather than feigning surprise when I, for instance, say the Broncos could be a 4-win team this year. Like that type of conversation is kind of sacred to have it be still fresh and organic. And so we do pre-plan the show. We outline what we're going to be doing. We'll brainstorm segments, but we don't get into the nitty-gritty in terms of what exactly we'll be saying within the segments.
All right. Well, I'm glad that I feel privileged. I know by the time people listen to this, the podcast will probably already be out, but I'm glad that I have like a sneak preview. Now I'm juiced. So
should be out soon.
So for the last kind of non-football related question, I'm on the subreddit a lot for the Around the NFL. Great group of people there. And
yes.
I've been kind of putting out these little help me ask these, like, the heroes, like, a question. And I have one that I have asked, I believe, only two people. But I want to ask you, because you're the host, before we get to the Jets, what is your favorite bit on the show?
Oh. Favorite bit on the show. That's a hard one, because I don't, a lot of the ones that, They kind of come and go, and some I like a lot, and then I'll get tired of them, then one will come back. But I guess one that I do kind of enjoy doing is whenever we kind of fall down a wormhole where I'm talking about my blue-collar roots in Pearl River, New York. I enjoy that because of it's fun to just to go down that road, but also it gets Greg mad. And I just enjoy that juxtaposition of being able to just bloviate about my upbringing and then know that Greg the whole time is stewing and looking to take me down a notch. So I would say that one is always reliable, especially when there's fake Bruce Springsteen music playing in the background.
Absolutely. And that gives us a perfect transition. You were, of course, raised a coal miner's son, worked very hard. You decided, a young Dan Hanzus decided to escape to the lightscapes of Los Angeles to begin writing about football, but you didn't leave all your roots behind, because you are a New York Jets fan, and for that is something that I think you're only born into. I'm not sure if anyone goes out and says, I'm going to choose the Jets to be my NFL team. I think it's something that you're explicitly born into, and today we are going to talk a little bit about those New York Jets. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Oh, yeah. All right. I love what I hear there. So,
and by the way, yes, you are almost exclusively born into it, but I will occasionally, just because a lot of people, obviously, if you know the podcast, it's well known, my Jets fandom. On Twitter, there will be the occasional, and usually people outside this country, that will say they just chose the Jets, and they made that decision as an adult or as a teenager, and that is hard to wrap my head around. But it does happen occasionally. I'll come across a tweet like that, and to which I say, never choose the Jets. They're chosen for you, and then you just have to live with it.
Yeah, for sure. So the Jets, actually, on a more optimistic note, they're kind of in a point right now where I think you can look down the road like 2 to 5 years and say, hey, like, Tom Brady might be retiring in the next 2 to 5 years, and the defense looks okay, and we might have this amazing quarterback who we'll start with, Sam Darnold. What do you think about Sam Darnold?
I'm so excited. I think and you're right, the Tom Brady stuff and the idea that that's not going to last forever, and it's been 20 years, so you just assume it will, but it won't. I mean, even if it takes another 3 or 4 years, it's not going to go on forever. And Sam Darnold represents defined by Belichick and Brady. And Darnold is a guy that I'm not a big college football watcher, but he kind of caught my imagination prior to his final year at USC, the year before, living in Los Angeles. There was just so much hype around him about how he was one of those special prospects that comes around maybe once a decade. That's how he was hyped up, at least going into his final season at USC. So I started watching games, and that was happening right around the time that the Jets were really in their darkest hour, which was last spring and summer when, you know, there was the cupboard was stripped completely bare, and there was actually a lot of speculation that they could be one of the more talented deprived rosters of the decade, and that they were an 0-16 candidate. And it was just no fun to go into the season the way as a fan as Jets fans did last year. So that's how the Scam for Sam on our podcast, how I brought that up repeatedly, because Darnold, even a year ago, 18 months ago, was like this guy, like maybe there is something good that can come out of all this. The Jets finally cratering is that they can get that young quarterback at the top of a draft class that they always seem to miss out on by winning a couple meaningless games and not getting into the true lottery of a draft. And it's just amazing how it turned out that they actually did the same old Jets thing, which was they were a 3-13 team that ended up going 5-11, but Big Mac, the GM, and I think he didn't get enough credit for what he did, even though he did give up a lot of draft value in second-round picks, his ability to move into that lottery position allowed them to land Darnold. And if you're a Jets fan, you couldn't be more excited about the guy. There's maybe not, he's not as highly touted or viewed as a can't-miss guy because he was a little up and down in his last season at USC, but you could still look at all the tangibles that he has, the intangibles that he has, and his strong throwing arm, his ability to improvise, his leadership abilities, the way that he seems built for the New York spotlight, his size, his pedigree, everything about him screams elite prospect, and as a Jet fan, you couldn't be more excited that he is maybe the guy to take the Jets out of this long, long, dark period.
So I want to ask you a little bit more about the quarterback room. From this day, August 1st, through the end of the season, how do you see the quarterback situation playing out?
I think it's, and I brought this up on our podcast, I think it's there's a little bit of anxiety for me and probably for many Jets fans, because the Jets haven't been known to juggle a quarterback room well. This, of course, is a team that once gave Mark Sanchez an ill-thought-out extension and then traded for Tim Tebow. So it's like you worry that they're not going to get this right, because what they have to do is three things. They need to, now that Darnold's in camp, you need to get him, obviously, the reps. You need to get him first-team reps. You need to get him extensive action in the preseason to get a look at him to see if he's ready to start the season. But then you have Teddy Bridgewater, who the team is feeding to the media how much they're in love with him. Mike Silver reported on our air that the Jets are obsessed with Teddy Bridgewater, and all that's well and good, but this is still a guy coming off a major knee injury, and if you really want him to have trade value and get good value back, which I would put in the realm of a mid-round pick, a third or fourth rounder, third rounder would be ideal, second probably a pipe dream, but a nice mid-round pick, you need to get him reps, and you need to give him enough preseason action that he could put something on tape, and when a team comes calling for a quarterback, he is a really nice target. And then Josh McCown, I don't know, because at what point do you say, well, we don't have enough reps for McCown, and does he just, you know, belly up to the bar for the next 4 weeks in Jersey and wait for the season to start? I don't know. So they have to balance that. I think Bridgewater will get traded, though. I would say I would be more surprised if he wasn't traded by this time next month, just because they need to clear up the logjam, and you're not going to pay $16 million in guaranteed money to two guys sitting on the bench if you put the kid in starting week one. So I think Bridgewater gets moved, and I'd be surprised if he wasn't by week one.
So who starts week one?
I have a sandwich prop with Sessler that it will be McCown. But since I made that prop last week, I'm starting to read more and more where it really sounds like the Jets want Darnold to play, I think. And there are reasons that you could say why that's a good idea, and you can make the case on the other side why there's no need to rush this. Why not, give McCown 4 weeks? And that's kind of where I fall on it, as exciting as it is to imagine, and I would get on board in a second, believe me, if they do go that route and start Darnold week one. But to me, I still think the best situation would be to have McCown start the season, trade Bridgewater, get a draft pick back, and then ease Darnold in maybe around week four. You have a Cleveland game in week three on a Thursday night, maybe that game, but that's a short week, so you probably would go week four and play it that way. Your goal is to have this guy for 15 years, so I don't think it should be this crazy urge to get him in immediately. That said, the way the NFL goes, I'm now starting to think I'm going to lose that sandwich, so Sam Darnold will be the week one starter.
All right, so it's interesting because everyone says, obviously, Teddy Bridgewater is going to get most likely going to get traded. The Jets are going to move him, but like, I only have one team that I could see that like would actually really crave Sam Darnold, and you're going to hate it, and you can give me a counter to maybe another team that might want him as well, but like, the New England Patriots just seem like too perfect a fit, because you have Brady, who I'm convinced that if they even sniff the Super Bowl this year, he's retiring. And even if he doesn't, he'll be gone within the next 2 years. I'm pretty confident in saying that.
We'll see about that.
And then you could let Bridgewater get the tutelage of Belichick, repair his knee, whatever, and then you have your next franchise guy to go into. Plus, for obviously the Jets and Patriots don't trade a lot, to get that done, like, you have to imagine they'd have to dangle a first-round pick or a high second-round pick in front of the Jets for them to say yes. I don't know. Do you think that's at all likely? And, like, where would you see Teddy Bridgewater being traded if he is traded?
I don't think there will ever be a trade, a significant trade, especially one involving a quarterback, between the Jets and Patriots. But especially with Belichick there, he hates the Jets, and the Jets have a lot of ill will toward the Patriots over the years. And I think that if the Patriots were desperate enough, if they got the vibe that they needed a plan, life after Brady ASAP, if they were that desperate to give up a second-round pick, that would mean they essentially traded Jimmy Garoppolo for Teddy Bridgewater, which would be some of the worst general manager work anyone's ever done, and it will be Bill Belichick's doing that happened. I think that is not going to happen, even though it makes a lot of sense. He would be Bridgewater would be a guy that you could trust, and he's somebody that you can imagine that Belichick could work to get the most out of, as he seems to always do with his quarterbacks. But in terms of what would be a more likely destination, I still see it as the Jets are going to, not that they're going to root for it to happen, but what tends to happen, unfortunately, every preseason, or almost every preseason, is there's a quarterback injury, a significant one, whether it's something that happens in training camp or during a preseason game, that costs a team its starter for some of the season, worst case scenario, all of the season. The Dolphins were hit the lottery, the reverse lottery on that last year. Of course, it was the Vikings a couple of years before that when Bridgewater himself got hurt, prompting the Bradford trade. So I think the team that the Jets would be most likely to trade for, it's not even in the stars yet that team, we know who that team is. A team as currently constituted, the Jaguars make a lot of sense to me. I mean,
but I don't know. They seem pretty confident.
They just, Yeah, they just gave Bortles a new deal, but it wasn't necessarily a total vote of confidence, and they do not have a great depth chart situation behind him. Bridgewater would be a great guy to fall back on if Bortles regresses this season. That's a Super Bowl-ready team that doesn't necessarily need, you know, a gunslinger with a turnover problem that Bortles can be. Bridgewater might be a better fit for that team the way it's built defensively and with their ball control offense. So I'll throw the Jaguars out there, and then maybe another team to be named if injury catastrophe strikes.
Right. So moving off of quarterbacks, because obviously the quarterback position is the most hyped in the NFL, but there is concern, and the anti-Sam Darnold take playing him early, I think, is that the Jets really don't have a super great wide receiving core. They have Robbie Anderson, but he has major off-field problems. And let me just start by asking you this. Do you think he's going to get suspended? Because the stuff that came out about him this offseason, I am shocked that we haven't heard more from the NFL on, disciplinary action.
Well, that is an impossible ask to ask anyone how the NFL chooses to litigate issues off the field, because they, even though basically all the charges against Anderson were dismissed, the NFL can still wield their justice, their brand of justice, and punish him as if they weren't dropped. So just because all the stuff involving the police officer, and it was a pretty nasty police report, if you care to dig into it, I'm sure you already know it, but Anderson has been a knucklehead off the field, and this is not the first instance where he's run a foul off the field. So I would be honestly surprised if he's not suspended, despite there being no serious charges that stuck. I don't think it will be a lengthy suspension, but I would guess it will be either one or two games, and that will dilute their depth chart, obviously. I think the Jets have a better wide receiver group than they're getting credit for. It's not an elite group by any chance, by any stretch. There's no superstars in the group, but there is a, if it breaks right, they can absolutely be competent and can move the ball with Quincy Enunwa, a rising star for them before that neck injury, and we haven't heard anything to suggest that his comeback is in peril. I'm going to assume that he's going to be back, and he's still a young guy. Terrell Pryor is somebody who's kind of bottomed out after really being somebody that showed a ton of potential, and the positive way to look at that is that he was just never healthy in his 1 year in Washington, and he's probably much closer to the player that he was in those promising seasons in Cleveland. So I like those players, and I think that if Robbie Anderson, once he is involved with the team, that's a nice little three trio there. And that Jermaine Kearse is a guy that, he's your classic meat and potatoes guy who can give you 70, 800, and six touchdowns. And he's a nice guy to have. He gives you a nice depth that should cover them with Robbie Anderson's suspension potentially coming. I think the running back group is okay. I really do.
Yeah, I like Bilal Powell a lot. I did want to ask you something. So I feel like maybe I just haven't seen a lot of it, but how big a loss was Austin Seferian Jenkins? Because I feel like people aren't playing up. He wasn't an all-star last year, but he was a really good tight end for the Jets.
It depends what part of the season you want to study. In the early portion, let's say the first half of the year, he was almost a borderline comeback player of the year candidate because he was, for the first time after a couple of years under Chan Gailey, where they basically completely disowned the tight end position as a source of offense, Jenkins stepped in and really was a guy that McCown could go to, and they had a nice little rapport. But in the second half, I don't know if I remember a tight end that was less dynamic, given the amount of targets he was getting. I mean, he was the king of the two-yard reception down the stretch. And if you look at his numbers, his yards per catch, his touchdowns, it really cratered. And I think if he would have kept up what he did in the first half and the second half, there's no way the Jets, who are flush with salary cap room, would have let him go. But I think inside the building, they were really alarmed by how much he fell off down the stretch. The bigger problem, though, to me, was that they did nothing really to address the loss of Safarian Jenkins. And I think they're kind of winging it with some younger guys and hoping somebody sticks. But it's not so much a loss of Safarian Jenkins, it's the fact that they don't seem to have somebody in there that's ready to contribute unless we're missing something that the Jets know.
Right. So, I have kind of a hot take on the Jets defense. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, I'm psyched. Let's hear it.
All right. So, my hot take on the Jets defense is that if Leonard Williams can perform and kind of bounce back from what was a weird year last year, where he went from one of the more promising talents to just being kind of invisible. He had injuries that he dealt with a little bit. But you look at the corners, Maurice Claiborne and Trumaine Johnson, obviously not all-stars, but I do think Todd Bowles is a good defensive coach who maximizes defensive talent. I think if everyone on this Jets defense performs to their maximum potential, by the end of the year, we could be saying this is like a borderline top 10 defense in the NFL.
That's a pretty good hot take. I respect the scorching nature of the top 10 would be awesome. I mean, Todd Bowles, who is...
not like super high top 10, of course. Like 10.
Todd Bowles needs to have his defense to have a big year or a big improvement this year, because he came in to the Jets with the pedigree of being a defensive guy, and their defenses have not been very good. He hasn't had a lot of great personnel, but I think Leonard Williams is a stud. I think he's a star. I think even last year, battling through injuries, even though may not have had the numbers, advanced metrics tell you that he still was a guy that made a difference in the games, that could push the pocket, that could pressure a quarterback. What the next step for him is to actually become a guy who gets to the quarterback and picks up some sacks, some turns the ball over. I mean, that's the last step for him, making the impact plays. But he is perhaps an underrated talent. The biggest question mark around him is, with now Wilkerson gone and Sheldon Richardson gone, and inexperienced guys around him and journeyman, will he just attract double teams constantly, and the Jets will be in trouble if no one else then can rise up when he attracts those double teams. And then on the secondary, I think, you know, you said that Trumaine Johnson wasn't an all-star. I think the Jets paid him to be a Pro Bowl star. That's the salary he got. He's one of the highest paid Jets in the history of the franchise, and I think they expect him, and Todd Bowles expects, to have basically the type of guy they thought they were getting when Darrelle Revis came back, somebody that you could lock up with the best wide receiver and maybe not put him on a Revis Island type level lockdown, but somebody who could really allow Bowles to not worry about the number one playmaker and then use that gift to focus in on other aspects of the field. I love Maurice Claiborne as a number two cornerback. I think that's exactly where he should be. And the safeties are a big spot to watch. Jamal Adams as a rookie made some rookie mistakes and had some lapses, but I think he showed, he flashed all pro potential, and I think he'll take a big leap. Marcus May also, they drafted a safety in the second round and the first round last year. He made strides as the year went along. I think the secondary could be one of the best in the AFC, and that would be their calling card. Maybe they jack the no-fly zone from the Broncos. They take it back, and that will be the nickname, because I think this team is built around their secondary defensively.
All right. Well, I like that take as well. So going into this season, like, how are you feeling with the Jets? Are you optimistic? Are you trying to keep optimism in check? Are you down on this team? Where are you at with them right now?
I'm an optimistic person by nature with a lot of things, so I almost always see the glass half full. With what they did, what the Jets did, and I said this on the podcast, what they did last year to the fan base is what the one thing you never should do as a franchise. You don't have to win the Super Bowl every year. You don't have to get to the playoffs every year. But the one thing you cannot take away from a fan base is hope. And last year, the Jets gave their fans no hope, nothing to be excited about, and then performed basically as expected, despite winning a couple more games than they should have. This season, you got to be excited as a Jets fan. I'm optimistic. I know they're not ready to challenge the Patriots. I know they're probably not. They're at least a year away from being a real playoff team. But I think that this could be a situation where the Jets, if Darnold is the real deal, and that's what it all boils down to, and that's the same for every team. It's all about, it starts at the quarterback position. But if he really does show flashes as a guy that could be a franchise guy to build around, and you factor in the positive pieces that we both, you and I, see on that defensive side of the ball, I think this is a team that could, if everything broke right, max out at around 8 wins, maybe even 9 if everything went their way. Maybe in, you know, mid-December, they're still in the wild card picture, and they probably don't get there, and they probably fall short, and I kind of have them pegged at 7-9 right now. But if they can get the fan base invested where the season is not over by Halloween, and Darnold shows signs that he is the guy, that will make the season a success. And I also think it will save the jobs of Todd Bowles and Mike Maccagna, the general manager.
Yeah, so what's the win total that you think Todd Bowles gets fired at?
I think they have to improve. It's arbitrary, but sometimes you think all this stuff is like, oh, there's so many things that they study. But I don't think he can go 5-11 again. I think that I think what the Jets will need to see is tangible progress, and that means winning more games than they have the last couple of years. I don't know if 6 is going to do it either. That will put him right on the bubble. Maybe if Darnold looks really good, but they still struggle to close games out and go 6-10, maybe he still survives. But if Darnold is mad or is a little bit, you know, showing some signs, or he gets hurt, and they lose double digit games, lose 11 games, anything more than 11, he's definitely out. So I think he has to get to that. I think 7 might be a magical number for the entire regime.
Yeah, that seems about right. Well, thank you very much for joining us on this edition of.
Oh, I loved it, Eric. It was fun. I love talking Jets, getting a little talk about how the sausage gets made at the podcast, and I love you know, you've been a loyal listener for years, so it's cool being able to talk to you, and anybody that listens to this, you know, obviously you did a nice job with the interview portion, so good. Well, hosting, bro.
Well, thank you very much. That means a lot coming from you, and maybe we can get you on next off season. So
only if Sam Darnold can play. I'm not going to talk ever again if they crater. So it's really okay on the Jets whether I come on your show again.
All right. Well, dear God, please make the Jets be good. Dear God, please make the Browns be semi-good, because that would just be a wild podcast dynamic if both those teams were anywhere near even average.
If the Patriots eventually suck and the Browns and Jets are at the top of the AFC, it's basically just rebooting the podcast, and it'll be a completely different feel. I'll take that. I'll sign up for that right now.
All right. Sounds good. Well, let's hope you and me both that Tom Brady retires in 2 years. Thanks a lot for joining
us. Sounds good.
All right, guys.
All right, Eric, have a good one.
Awesome. Okay. Hey, man, thanks so much again, as I pause this really quick. Follow us on Twitter at EndZonePod. If you have any suggestions, questions, or you just want to shout out on the pod, send an email to endzonepod@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.